Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie, the van insurance specialists.
On Dublin's Sunshine 106.8.
Oh, Ken Doherty.
And now it's going to be the World Championship for Stephen Roach, is the champion of the world.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVant.ie. Absolutely jammed show today. We'll be kicking off with papers in a moment, joined by Ken from Sheffield, catching up with him. He was with champion jockey Tony McCoy during the week, and we'll hear a little bit of a chat that he had with him as well and his thoughts on the Euro 2020. In racing, we'll be talking to head of communication for Boyle Sport, Liam Blanche, as he chats about the very latest horse racing news, and we'll get his lucky 15 as well. In GAA, Declan Drake will be on the line to review Leinster under 20s hurling final between Dublin and Galway, and we'll also be looking ahead to Dublin and against Antrim in the hurling later on, and Dublin against Cork in the ladies. In football, we've Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call to review the week's Euro matches and look ahead to the rest of the championships as we enter into the quarterfinal stages, and he will be looking back at all of the League of Ireland fixtures as well during the week. In tennis, of course, it's time for Wimbledon, so we're going to be talking to former professional tennis player Conor Nyland, looking at Wimbledon, which starts on Monday. In rugby, there's loads of action happening as well. The under-20s going well at the moment. We're going to be talking to Will Slattery to review Ireland's latest win in the Six Nations. Also have a little look at Toulouse's victory over La Rochelle, of course, Ronan O'Gara, as La Rochelle as it's referred to now, in the top 14 final last night. And in golf, of course, we're delighted to be joined this week by Deirdre Smith, who will be having a chat with us discussing the wonderful form Leona Maguire is in at the moment and how well she's doing in the US Women's PGA. And as well as that, we'll be talking about Niall Carney's lead in the BMW International Open. We also have Rob Giles on from Astro Park telling us about the fact that they're back in action next week, which I'm sure will be welcome news to many parents out there listening. So, as usual, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. And don't forget, we're on Facebook, Twitter at Sport106. And we're on Instagram as well, Dublin's Talking Sport 106.8. Well, as I said, Ken, as usual, is on the line this morning. Morning, Ken, how are you?
Morning, Reg, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. Yeah, God, it's absolutely jam-packed show we have ahead of us today. It's great. So many things are back and so much going on. And we've got the Euros going on as well in the background. I had withdrawal symptoms the last couple of nights.
You miss it, don't you? Because you look forward to the matches every night or every afternoon. And we've got some cracking matches as well coming up today. Of course, the big excitement over here is England-Germany, of course. You know, that everybody over here thinks that England are going to go on and win the Euros. Well, I'm sorry to say, I can't see it on their performances so far. I haven't been very impressed with them at all. I thought they'd have a good chance at the beginning, but at the after what I've seen, I don't think they'll probably even get by Germany, to be honest. I think it's going to be really tough for them on Tuesday night. What about you?
Well, I think the worst thing that could happen to England was the fact that Germany were so bad in their last match. And by bad, they left it so late. You know, they just barely got there by the skin of their teeth. They got the shock of their lives. They got there in the end. And I think there's going to be a massive bounce back from that. And God help England on the back. I think they have no chance. I think they've absolutely no chance. I think I actually think Germany could do a job with them, just purely based on
if you remember back was it 96 the finals when Germany beat them on penalties in that semi-final, and Gareth Southgate missed the final penalty, didn't he, for England, and of course they went out. Muller scored the last one and they went out. So how ironic it would be if they did it again on penalties, and maybe you know, against Southgate again, it would be quite. But I mean, there's a huge wave of, you know, positivity over here. But you know what the English are like. That's what they're like. They get really.
They go crazy.
You know, they go crazy. Yeah, but they don't. They haven't won anything since '66. You know, and it's going to be very tough for them. But the draw. Yeah, absolutely. But you know that draw on that side of the.
I think we're just losing Ken there. We'll just try and get Ken back. He's he was just talking about the English match against Germany coming up, of course, and how tough that one's going to be. But there's loads of great games coming up as well in the Euros. It's been highly entertaining so far, the Euros, and everything that's been going on. The one I'm looking forward to as well tonight, of course, is the Wales against Denmark game, which is coming up at 5 o'clock this evening. I think given everything that's gone on with Denmark and how difficult that has been all along the way, I think it'll be interesting to see how things go in that game. But I that's one I'm looking forward to. Ken is back. Hey, Ken, how are you?
Yeah, I don't know what happened there, Reg. I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah,
I was just saying to our listeners there while you were gone, the other one I'm really looking forward to later on, of course, is the Wales Denmark game. Supporters going crazy too, having made it through to the round of 16. But with the drama around the Denmark team and the way they've responded to that drama and the bounce back, there's this sort of a weird feeling going on with the Danes at the moment that maybe they're doing it for, you know, Eriksen and all.
Christian Eriksen, yeah.
It's a funny feeling, but it's going to be a tough one for Wales, no doubt about it.
It's going to be very tough. And, of course, they're playing in Copenhagen as well, so that's going to make it even harder. But, it's great to see Denmark coming through, I must say. They've got some great footballers, and but I'm delighted, so happy for Wales as well, for such a small nation, producing great players over the years. And they've got a really strong squad and a squad that's really together. So, I think that's going to be a really close game tonight.
Yep, absolutely. I think it will be. I suppose Denmark are the favourites, and you can understand why, but I'm kind of thinking there's a chance that we could see Wales maybe sneaking this.
Yeah, it'd be great, wouldn't it? I mean, it'd be like they're in the bottom part of the draw, and they could possibly meet, you know, England or Germany or whoever gets through into the semi-finals, which will be mouth-watering as well. But I just think the Danes will probably have too much for them, I think, tonight, you know. But and particularly with the home advantage, it's a huge advantage for them. As for England, you know, England may play all their matches at Wembley should they get through as well, and that makes a big difference, you know. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, there's been lots of stuff happening during the week as well. There was an interesting one during the week. I want to get your thoughts on it. We saw the case of the transgender weightlifter Laurel Hubbard being allowed to compete in the Olympics. Before I ask you about it, Jane McNamara, our producer here, went out and got some thoughts of the people on the streets in Dublin about that decision to allow Laurel Hubbard to participate in the Olympics. Let's have a listen to what the reaction was.
Okay.
It's great to see. It's great to see everybody getting on with the loose and doing stuff what they want to be and who do you want to be as well.
I feel like transgender people should be allowed to compete in any Olympics. I think they're people just like anyone else, and I think it sends a good signal to the rest of the world that they can compete as well.
If there's a person that has XX chromosomes competing against people that have XY chromosomes, them chromosomes that are XX physically enhance your body to the point where you are going to be more at an advantage than people that have the XY chromosomes. So it has nothing to do with gender, it's just basic biology.
She's passed all the tests that that the IOC have put forth, so there's nothing to say she can't compete. If she's passed all the tests that they deem eligible for an athlete to compete in a female category, then she's allowed to compete in that category.
It's unfair when there's prizes at stake.
You know, there's the people say that she's built differently, she has the physicality of a man. It's like, she still is a woman at the end of the day.
It's interesting, Ken. You know, it's one of those things that's really divisive for a lot of people, and they come down on the side of, excuse the pun, but X or Y, and you know, it's really it's a strange one. What are your thoughts on it?
It is a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, to be honest, you know, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with it. I think if they're going to allow transgender in sport or into the Olympics, you know, then why not have a competition just for transgenders? I don't know. I think I'd be interested to see what a lot of the weightlifters, the lady weightlifters, would say about it, you know, and if they'd come out and be honest about it. Do they feel that it's they're at a disadvantage, you know? That would be more interesting. I can understand what the Olympic Committee are trying to do and embrace the, you know, the transgenders into sport as well. And that's fair enough, but maybe just have a separate competition for them, you know, because I don't know. I feel it's a little bit unfair for those the other women weightlifters, you know?
Yeah, well, interesting that you say that, because one of the Australian rivals, Charisma Amo Tarrant, has come out in support of Laurel Hubbard and said that she doesn't have a problem with her competing. And you know, obviously the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, has supported it. And there's lots of people supporting it. But at the same time, there are also, you know, the opinions that it's an unfair advantage to other women. And you can see that, why that might be the case. I mean, there's an organisation, Save Women's Sport Australia, and they've opposed it because they say it just creates an unfair competition and it's a flawed policy from the IOC. And I have looked at a lot of documentation on this as well, and in particular... In America, in the collegiate front, a lot of runners and athletes on the track and field as well, saying that, look, you know, all their way through high school and college, they were the leading female athlete, and now they can't get past third place because there's transgender women competing who are just physically stronger than them. They can never catch up with that strength. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea.
It's the same.
Having a transgender competition.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know whether or not, you know, that will work either, because that people will come out and say that that's discrimination. So it's...
Yeah, maybe. I mean, rugby. I think rugby has banned transgenders. They don't allow them compete against...
against
women.
There are sports where there's going to be physical interaction. So, I mean, you know, if you had exactly in that situation, like take any sport where there's, you know, let's say whether it be football, rugby, Gaelic football, hurling, whatever, the physical advantage has to be taken into account. And leaving aside all issues of gender, like it's just physically,
you
have to think it's not a fair situation.
I noticed the way you didn't include snooker in those sports.
No, you know, but it's funny.
You're right. I agree with you. You know?
I mean, if you looked at somebody like, just take an example where we might be going to the extreme, but if you look at a situation like where you've got Bryson DeChambeau at the moment, who's burning up the course because of his physical nature, and he's out driving all of the men in his own sport because of the physical nature. Like if you take somebody like that as an extreme example, and then you found somebody with that sort of a physical advantage and put them into women's golf and had them going off the ladies' tees and everything else, well, there you could see a perfect example where it's just night and day in terms of physical ability.
I mean, you know, you can... I absolutely agree with you, 100%, you know, and, you know, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with it, but I'm very comfortable with the Olympic Committee trying to include them into the sport. That's a positive thing. But for me, I think, you know, against those women, I think it'd be an unfair advantage. And I feel like if they wanted to do something, they maybe, you know, a transgender competition. Yeah, exactly. That may be a possibility, but it's an interesting one, you know. But I'm a little bit comfortable. It is.
You know,
it's absolutely.
In this current cancel society that we live in, you know, everyone's terrified if they say the wrong thing, they're going to be held up to task over it, and it is very difficult. But it's difficult for everybody involved, and it's a discussion that will go on and on. Look, you had an interesting week yourself as well. You got to play in Sunny Dale with the great Tony McCoy. I think he and you got to have a bit of a chat with him afterwards. It was a good day though.
Yeah, it was a great day. Yeah, myself and Stephen Hendry took himself and Matt Selt, who's another professional snooker player, on, and we had a lovely day. It was beautiful, sunshine, and but they beat us on the 18th, unfortunately. so we had to pay for lunch. But it was fantastic. Yeah, and I caught up with him and asked him a few ideas about his ideas about the Euros and what he thought. So I'm sure you're going to play that as well. Yeah. But he's a lovely guy. You know, I've been in his company many a times. And he's sound. He's really very grounded, very down there. Loves the laugh, loves the wind-up, loves the banter. And, of course, he loves winning as well. You know what I mean?
You never lose that.
And no, I tell you what, he was great. He was great at bumping the ball over the bunkers as well. I must say, yeah.
The bunker bouncer. Yeah, a lot of those. You end up playing a lot of those. No question. All right, look, we're going to play that clip now. Can you take care of yourself for the rest of the week? We'll catch up again with you very shortly.
Okay, enjoy the football the weekend.
Oh, I can't wait. I'll be texting you, don't worry. I'll be texting you.
I tell you, my team is still in there. Ukraine, 130-1, Reg. You never know.
I'm still there hanging on, but he's getting me to heat as well with Portugal.
And Ronaldo, top scorer. Get in there.
All right. Cheers, bud. Okay. Talk to you soon.
Cheers, Reg. Have a good one. Bye.
That's it. Ken there, and he did have a great game during the week, and Tony McCoy took the money, and let's have a listen to him catching up with Tony during the week.
Yeah, we did have a great day. Yourself and Stephen Henry got a good cleaning by myself and Matt, and it was really enjoyable. The golf wasn't great. Luckily my partner, who's not short of confidence but not short of talent either.
He's pretty good. He played did he go around in two overs?
I'd say at the most, you know, whatever about talking the talk, he can walk the walk as well. A lovely day on Sunningdale, such a treat, and I'm very lucky to be a member here, and it's an absolute treat, absolute beautiful course. only bad players like me were going to
me and you would have a good game with the rest of them himself and Stephen Hendry. The football, you've been watching the Euros,
football's been great,
it's been fantastic, isn't it?
I mean, I'm a sports fan. I love football. Obviously Italy have been very impressive, Germany, and obviously France have been the long-time favourites, and rightly so. You know, I know they talk about how good they are offensively with Mbappe and Benzema and Griezmann, but, you know, Kante, you know, in the middle, and then their defenders have been, they're nearly as good as their forwards. So France are rightly so favourites, you know. And you know, obviously England have done well to qualify. They haven't been overly impressive, but they've got the job done.
It's been exciting championships, though, hasn't it? There's been a lot of great matches in it.
You know, it's you know, I feel like, you know, with no European championships or no Euros or no World Cup, whatever, I always find the summers quite long.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have them, and it'll be you know, the next few weeks will be brilliant to watch. You know, the standard is top class, isn't it? You know,
we miss Ireland being there. You know, both north and south. Like, you know, and it's just a shame.
It is.
Scotland did really well, but it's not the same when you haven't got you know, a Republic or Northern Ireland.
No,
there,
you know, and we kind of think maybe like a rugby team, we might be better off. You know, if we had two, you know, if the two of them joined in together, we might have some hope of getting there. You know, we were very spoiled, weren't we, back in the days of Jack Charlton, you know. You know, between, you know, the late 80s, early 90s.
88
you know.
And 90.
Yeah, we were very spoiled. I started working Jim Bulger's in 1990, you know, and that was obviously Italian 90, and we were very, very spoiled. And then if you look back at the players we had, no disrespect to the lads now, but we had Ireland had an array of top Premier League players, and unfortunately they just don't have them at the moment, exactly, whether it be, you know, I know we had a few lads, I think there was,
we'll come again.
You know, I think there's a few of them, Grealish and a few of them who obviously had a few days out for Ireland, you know, you'd be hoping they'd come again, but it might be an idea for the two, you know, be a little bit like the rugby, they might have a better chance of.
So who's your outside pick then for the Euros? Who'll you be cheering on?
I don't really have an outside pick.
Do you
pick
think England have a chance? I mean, there's a big build up about them, but
do you know what, I don't know if that, I thought offensively they'd have been a little bit better, you know, because, and I thought their weakness was defensively, but I don't think, I mean, I thought they were a little better the other night with Grealish and Saka, Bukayo Saka. I'm an Arsenal fan, but Bukayo Saka is a proper little
brilliant
player.
Yeah.
You know, I thought he created as much as anyone. But I think if they go back to where they were in the beginning of the tournament with Phil Foden and they dropped Bukayo Saka and that, I don't think.
Do you think there's too much pressure on them, or do you think they'll be able to handle the pressure? They're going to play possibly Germany, Portugal, or France and Wembley.
I mean, you know as well as anyone. I often said that sport is about people who go out and go to play in Wembley, or, you know, play at the Crucible, at Cheltenham, wherever it may be. The ones that are really good go there with the belief that people are coming to watch them.
Yeah,
you know, if I was walking out to play, you know, if I at the Aviva or wherever it may be, I'd be, you know,
if you want to play the best
inwardly, there has to be an arrogance. You know, you don't want to say it or you don't want to talk about it, but you have to believe that they're all there to watch me.
Yeah,
not here to watch the rest of the team.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And you know, and even though if you're an individual sport, if it's snooker or football, you should still want to be the best player.
Yeah, you know, you want to play against the best as well.
You want to be a showman. You know what I mean? You want to be, you know, that's and that's where I admire, you know, however vain or whatever he may be, but I admire, and for all the wealth that he has, I admire Ronaldo for what he has, you know, because he's an athlete.
Yeah, yes.
And he wants to be the best footballer in the world.
Absolutely,
you know, you know, you can have a comfortable lifestyle of all the money in the world, but you still want to be the best you know, and that's, you know, what has he scored in five Euros tournaments, whatever.
But you want to play against the best because you want to test yourself as well, like that. Like the way you wanted to test yourself against us at golf today.
Just slightly lesser scale. Slightly lesser, less talented, less watchable. Sort of, it wouldn't get very many viewing figures.
No, it would actually. But it kept us going. We went right to the last.
I'll tell you what it would be good for. It would be good for all those people who haven't played a lot of golf and think that golf is really difficult. I think, look at them clowns. They're even having a go at it. We'll all have a go. It might bring more people into the game if they watch us play.
If they can play that badly. But it was good fun today, anyway. Yeah. Exactly. But anyway, great to catch up with you. And congratulations. Cheers. You won again.
Yeah, won the money.
Won the money. Okay. We'll put it down to your partner.
Great stuff there. Ken catching up with the legendary Tony McCoy. There's no doubt about it. I'm going to have a look at the contract. He's having the life at the moment. There's no doubt about it. Sunningdale with Tony McCoy playing golf and having the crack. All right. Fair play to him. It's well deserved. On a piece of good news for a lot of parents out there as well. Delighted that Astro Park is going to be coming back from next week for summer camps for kids. I'm delighted to be joined now by Rob Giles from Astro Park. Morning, Rob. How are you?
Hi, Reggie. Thanks for having me on this morning.
No problem. It's great news, as I said, for a lot of parents who will be looking for things for the summer for their kids to do. And the camps are back. Tell us a little bit about them.
Yeah, the camps take place for 9 weeks in Talla and Coolock. Both locations are located 5 minutes from the M50 exits. The camps will run from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. daily. The camps can be booked online only at astropark.ie. And the camps are for boys and girls aged between 4 and 12.
Yeah, and what can the kids expect? What kind of things are you going to be laying on for them?
Well, the camps are outdoor multi-activity camps, and they don't focus only on one sport. To avoid boredom and promote lots of fun throughout the week, kids will play GAA, tag, rugby, soccer, bubble football, Nerf Wars, and we have 3 inflatable sports bouncy castles that we've put out as well, and a few more things as well.
I'd say you had a lot of parents constantly beating down your door trying to work out when you've been opening up again. How have they all been coping over the last year? I suppose it's been difficult.
Since last year, obviously, we've been out of action. We've been closed 3 times, so our staff are back and we're raring to go. Parents and kids need a break from COVID, and look, we'll ensure that the kids have a great time at the camp. Like, parents have appreciated that the kids are going to be having fun outdoors, and it's in a safe environment as well. So, yeah, we're looking forward to welcome everybody back next week.
Okay, so just give me the contact details again, Rob, astropark.ie.
It's astropark.ie, and you can just click on the camps there and you'll be able to book them online,
Excellent stuff. Okay, Rob, thanks for giving us that, and like I said, it'll be great news to a lot of parents.
Great, Thanks, Reggie. Cheers, man. Thanks very much.
Take care, Rob. All the best. That's Rob Giles there from Astro Park. Just to give you a little bit of public service announcement that they're back open, and get your kids booked in, because I know, like my own, they're absolutely dying. And the camps are packing up so quickly as well. It's almost impossible to get them into the summer camps at the moment. So there's another option for you that'll get you through the summer. We're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, I'll be talking to Conor Nyland about the upcoming Wimbledon tournament. Don't go away. Point A. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. We'd love to hear from you. You can text us on 087 1155 777 or WhatsApp 087 188 1068. Still loads to come on the show. We will be catching up with Leon Blanche for all of the horse racing tips a little later on. Will Slattery will be going through the rugby, and particularly the under-20s win last night. And Deirdre Smith will be looking at Leona Maguire's progress in the USPGA. PGA, and Niall Kearney as well in the lead in the BMW International. Declan Drake is on the GAA and Alan Cawley has football. But now it's time to turn our attention to tennis, and I'm delighted to welcome back Conor Nyland. Good morning, Conor. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. I'm good, thanks.
Great. I said it last week. It's that time of year when you feel Wimbledon around the corner, when you know it's starting. For me, it feels summer is officially here, and it's great to see that it's coming back. And indeed, that Andy Murray is going to be making a welcome comeback in the Wimbledon singles as well. So it's one of the sporting highlights of the summer, and we've a lot to look forward to with it, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great time of year for tennis fans. Tennis is on terrestrial TV, so you can just flick it on and find it quite easily. You don't have to go searching on Amazon Prime, where the main ATP Tour and WTA events are. It's great. And as you say, it's nice to see Andy Murray, metal hip and all, still being able to go out and play. I watched him play a couple of matches at the warm-up event in Queens 2 weeks ago. He really doesn't look the same guy in terms of mobility that he was, obviously, at his prime. But I think he's kind of looking at this Wimbledon, maybe another Wimbledon. Can he get a bit of a run, win a couple of rounds? But it's really hard to see him sort of being a guy who'll be there beyond, say, the third or fourth round. I think if he makes a fourth round, he'll have done incredibly well.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. And then, obviously, you've got Federer as well, sort of in a similar boat, in that he's certainly, you would have thought, coming to the end, he turns 40 in August, and made fourth round of the French Open and pulled out, but he's saving himself for Wimbledon, as he said a few weeks ago. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on as well.
Unfortunately, there won't be any Nadal there. We always think of himself and Federer, those great matches. But of course, Novak Djokovic, he's favourite to defend the title, and he's looking for a record equaling 20th Grand Slam men's title. He's the kind of pantomime villain, isn't he, Novak Djokovic? Mm. People just can't seem to warm to him, but there's no question he's going to go down in terms of achievement in the game as probably the greatest of all time.
Yeah, Federer and Nadal are both on 20 slams, and Djokovic is on 19, and he'll be hoping to equal that. And obviously, he's also going for the calendar Grand Slam, because he won the Aussie in January, he won the French. Nobody's done that in the men's game, I think, since Rod Laver, late 60s, early 70s. He's going to be very, very hard to beat. It's hard to see past him. I was a little bit surprised Nadal pulled out. He's not injured. He has a warm-up event on grass in Mallorca this week that Djokovic actually played doubles in. And I thought he'd maybe take a couple of weeks off after the French, maybe play doubles or something at the tournament in Mallorca. Wouldn't be mentally or physically that taxing, and then maybe see how he gets on at Wimbledon, because he's 34 and only has so many Wimbledons left, but obviously he feels like he needs to rest the body. I was a little bit surprised to see him pull out, but yeah, Djokovic is the main man. It's going to be really, really hard to stop. A lot of people are saying he has quite an easy, a favourable draw. He's got a guy called Jack Draper, who's a young 19-year-old British guy who I think will be a top 50 guy in the next couple of years. He's talented. I think he should come through that. But then he has a former Wimbledon finalist in Kevin Anderson in the second round, which isn't easy for a second round. So I think that will be an interesting one to watch. Kevin's been injured a little bit the last year, but at the same time, he's 6'7" with a massive serve, so he'll be a little bit dangerous.
Who should we look out for in the younger generation? I mean, there hasn't, been that many. The names of Djokovic, Federer, Nadal, Murray, they've kind of been dominating Wimbledon. But when you look at someone like Tsitsipas, for example, who, got to the final against Djokovic, who else in the younger generation, in particular on grass, should we be watching to see that might cause a problem?
Yeah, well, I think Jannik Sinner, a young Italian 19-year-old, he's actually in Djokovic's quarter as well. So they're potentially going to meet in the quarterfinals. I can't remember who Sinner has in the fourth round. He'll have somebody seeded a little bit higher than him. So that will be one to watch for. Yeah, a little bit of a changing of the guard, I think, will happen over the next year or two. Tsitsipas making the French Open final is a big step for him. He'll be really dangerous at Wimbledon, though. He, I think, having been up two sets to love with the French, I believe he also lost his grandmother the day of the final. So he took the last couple of weeks off, hasn't played a warm-up event on grass. So he'll be coming in probably a little bit a little bit cold, but he could potentially go on a bit of a run. But you're right, it's been a ridiculously long reign for those top guys, and it still hasn't really happened. Like, Thiem won the US Open last year. He's out with this with a wrist injury. We're still waiting and waiting and waiting. And I mean, Djokovic still looks like he's got at least a couple of years where he's going to be the main guy at these things. So, you know, we could be looking at 24, 25 slams for him, you know. It's crazy.
He's only 34, and by Federer standards, that's nothing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Federer was in the Wimbledon final with a match point 2 years ago at 37, you know. So, you know, anything's possible. I think even you see it with Ronaldo in the Euros, you know, the guy's 35, and he's probably the best guy in the tournament still. So, you know, I think, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was 30, wasn't it? That was the time where you felt things slow down, and now it looks like maybe it's 36 or 37, just the way these guys are looking after themselves. So, yeah, it's definitely changed.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think Djokovic will be around for a long, long time. He's got that determination about him that seems to, you know, he really wants to push himself. I suppose if you're Djokovic and you're thinking, right, I'm not the darling of everybody's eyes, but I want to, you know, I almost want to shut them all up. I'm going to prove that you might like your Nadal and you might like your Federer and all the sweethearts, but I'm going to be winning titles for another 3 or 4 years, put it way beyond anything they've ever done, and that's the only way that he can prove to be the greatest, and maybe win respect that way.
I think that's exactly it, Reggie. I think that's kind of what's happened. I think he spent a lot of his early, Djokovic spent a lot of his early 20s and mid 20s sort of trying to be liked and loved, and for whatever reason, he wasn't. And now, obviously, then he got defaulted at the US Open, hitting a Lions judge. That is completely, you know, probably copper fastened, maybe dislike for him, and a couple of comments he made about vaccines and bits and pieces last year. I think he's very, very focused on trying to turn the screw here. And look, he's still behind Nadal and Federer at 19. But yeah, it would look like he's going to pass them and maybe have a bit of daylight between them, which would be incredible. Personally, I'd like them all to finish at 20. I think it'd be kind of cool. They've been such an incredible generation all coming up kind of together. And then for them just to be sitting there for history at the same level, I think that'd be kind of cool. But I think that's probably not going to happen.
It's not likely. I can't see him saying, I'll win number 20. And you know what, lads? We'll all stay together. I don't see that happening.
Cross the finish line together. Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. The women's game then, of course, the side of the game that I tend to prefer in recent years, just because the skill levels are so amazing at it. And there's a lot more tennis to watch at times. It's not just the power game. What way do you see that going? I see Halep has been, you know, can't play again, still carrying injuries and things like that. But it's a lot more open, isn't it, the women's championship?
Yeah, I mean, you could give me 20 names here and we put it into a hat and, you know, whoever we pull out, you know, your guess is as good as mine, really. It's very, very, very tough. I mean, I love Ashley Barty's game. I love watching her. I think she's such a high quality tennis player with so much variety. But she pulled out in she was having a really good clay court season, but then she pulled out a few weeks before the French Open with an injury, and she hasn't played again another warm up event. So she's won the Junior Wimbledon title. She plays great on grass, but I just feel like, again, not having a win under a belt on grass, it's hard to come in and take the title. But I'd love to see her. I'd love to see her do it. Swiatek has been, again, another person who's probably put her head up, so it's a little bit above the rest of the group. But again, she has been a little bit off form. I watched her play her first couple of rounds in Eastbourne this week on grass, and she was really struggling against sort of players ranked around 50 to 100. So it's hard to know. I mean, it could be a Kvitova, you know, somebody who's won it before, a really high quality performer. It's just, again, and obviously you got Serena as well. Again, the fact that it's best of three sets means that it's just the players are a lot more vulnerable. You know, with the men's side, it's best of five sets. So, you know, as I've said many times, if somebody has a good 45 minutes to an hour on the women's side, they can really put themselves in a position where they're very close to winning a match. But even we saw with Djokovic, down two sets to love a couple of times at the French Open, was able to reel the guys back in because he has so much time. So the women's event is just that bit more difficult to predict. Serena's really, really keen to obviously get her Grand Slam record. But again, she's the same age as Roger, so she's just kind of trying to fight against time a little bit. So look, it'll be really interesting to see. But I would say I'd love to see Barty win it.
And what about Krejcikova, of course? I know she's ranked up at 15, but on the back of the French Open triumph, different surfaces.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, and I think, you know, they often talk about, you know, when you win your first Grand Slam, a lot of the players can go a bit quiet, you know, for the next few months, just because their life has changed. And certainly somebody like Krejcikova has come from a long way out and done it. So I'm sure there's just been a huge amount of things going on over the last two or three weeks with this really quick turnaround. It's even a week shorter than it usually is. I just feel like it's going to be so hard for her to pull that to one side and then be ready to go and win seven matches again. But hey, she could potentially ride the wave, but I think it's a bit unlikely.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, Conor, no doubt about it. There's plenty for us to look forward to. We'll probably get you back on next week again to have a chat about how things are going. But great to chat to you. All is well with you anyway.
Yeah, all good. I can't get over to Wimbledon this year. Yeah. I usually get over and have a look. The guy I played at Wimbledon 10 years ago, Adrian Mannarino, is playing Roger Federer in the first round in a couple of days. So I'll be tuning into that. He's still at it. So, all good, Richie. You'll love the chat next week.
Okay, excellent, Conor. We'll chat to you soon. Thanks for that. That's Conor Nyland there, of course, a former Davis Cup player and probably one of the most favourite tennis players that we've had, of course, down through the history. Although I did think post-retirement, he lost out to Chris Goldsmith-Pole, narrowly losing out to the Irish legend J.D. Hackett as the all-time favourite Irish tennis player. But we'll go with Conor on that one. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now, but when we come back, we'll be talking to Leon Blanche for the horse racing right up to the end of this hour. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie here every Saturday from 9 to 11. Now it's time to turn our attention to horse racing. Delighted to be joined on the line from Boyle Sports by Leon Blanche. Good morning, Leon. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you keeping, pal?
Keeping well, thanks. In great form, and delighted to see that there's a few spectators been allowed back in, of course, for the Irish Derby meetings and stuff this week. So that's good news.
Oh, it's fantastic news. Yeah, look, I mean, I think there's going to be 1,000 people there in total, which is brilliant. It's being used as a pilot event, which is fantastic for horse racing. It's been a long time. I think Down Royal had some spectators up at their track last Saturday, so brilliant to see the Curra having people there. And the biggest day in the past season is the Irish Derby. Going back years ago, Reggie, thought there'd be 30,000 there on the infield, on the main track. Just a great buzz, a great day. And nice to have some people there because it will add a little bit of atmosphere. Not a lot, you know, because it's not a huge crowd. Yeah. But in terms of, I think a lot of the tickets have gone to local people. I think they've given 50 free tickets to frontline healthcare workers, which is what it's all about, because they've been the one who've been really keeping the show on the road through this nightmare of COVID-19. So great that local people and healthcare workers will be there to enjoy a good day's racing, a really, really good day's racing.
Yeah, and as we've seen from other sports like the football, like the rugby, like the GA, a small amount of people can make a lot of noise, especially in an empty can of a stadium. So it can make a bit of noise. So we'll no doubt that they'll be cheering on and just happy to be there. Aidan O'Brien, of course, he'd be eyeing 15th victory in the Dubai Duty Free. Of course, the million euro Dubai Duty Free Derby as Moore riding the favourite High Definition.
Yeah, look, Ryan Moore's on High Definition. Aidan, look, as you rightly said, I mean, he's a genius of a trainer. He's mastered this race, going for his 15th win. Moore is on the favourite. He's only had, actually, three race course starts, Reggie. I mean, he won his two-year-old races after taking from last to first on both occasions. Then they had to kind of rush him to get to the Dante in York, where he ran very well. He finished third. But it was a good run. They decided to skip Epsom and give the horse a little bit more time to get him ready for the Irish Derby. And look, he's a worthy favourite, but I do think that he's quite short at 6-4.
Yeah.
And I just think, Reggie, in an Irish Derby at the Curra, you're going to have to stay to win the race. That's one thing that you can be assured of. I think it'll be truly run Derby. There won't be any excuse for any horse, and usually at the Curra, with its big galloping track, the best horse normally wins. Now, I'm going to go for something also trained by Aidan O'Brien. a horse that only ran at Royal Ascot not too long ago. I was going to go for Van Gough, but I've changed my mind. So watch what's going to happen now. Van Gough is going to absolutely scoot it.
I'm
going to change my mind, and I'm going to go for Wordsworth,
right?
Number 11. Yeah. He actually finished second behind the favourite at the Curragh last year as a two-year-old by definition. He finished also second at Ascot of a very slowly run race. Mm. I think today it will be quite a test. And I think at around about 10 or 12.
Yeah, Reggie, sorry about that. Yeah, look, I mean, I was just saying I was initially probably going to go with Van Gogh. Yeah. But you know what? I'm going to switch. I'm going to go to Wordsworth because I was just looking back through his form, looking at how he runs. He will stay. He's a full brother to Kew Gardens. Many racing fans will remember Kew Gardens. But this Wordsworth, he could run a massive race off a quick pace. Mm. And I just think at 10 or 12 to 1, I think he's a good each-way shout. The favourites, he'll have the supporters, I've no doubt, because he's only had the three runs in his life. Wordsworth's only had four.
Yep.
So these three-year-olds are still improving. So for me, Wordsworth each way in the Irish Derby at a quarter to four.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, give me the rest of your lucky 15, Leon, because you have gone for a few outsiders in it, so if it comes up, you'll be some hero.
Yeah, look, Reggie, I'm going for a bit of value today. And look, Newcastle has a big day also, and the Northumberland Plate is their main event. So I'm going to start from looking at Newcastle. My first horse that I think could run well is running in the 255, a horse called Cosmelli. Decent course form, 18 to 1. Then we're going to move on to the 330 at Newcastle. It is the big one. It is the Northumberland Plate. The favourite, Trushan, will be well supported, I've no doubt, for Alan King. A very good claimer, taking £5 off his top weight. But I'm going to go with Island Brave. Again, likes the track. That horse is a 16 to 1 chance. And sorry, I missed the first one. At 145, a horse called Major Jumbo. I think this horse is incredibly well handicapped. He's only off a mark of 95. Last year, he was third in a Group 3 on this card. He's come down the ratings. I think if he can reproduce that type of run from 12 months ago, I think Major Jumbo could go well. So I'll call him out probably in time order. 145 Newcastle, Major Jumbo 16 to 1. 255 Newcastle, Cosmelli at 18 to 1. 330 at Newcastle, Island Brave 16 to 1. And finally, the Irish Derby at 345, Wordsworth at 10 to 1.
Excellent stuff, Leon. Okay, we'll get all that up on our social media channels. While I have you on, just very quickly, you don't only do horse racing, of course, in Boyle Sports, down to the last 16 in the Euros. Who would be your pick to go outright at this stage?
Well, I've backed Italy before a ball was kicked, Reggie. They haven't disappointed me yet, yeah, but they haven't had a real test yet, Reg. Mm. I think it could be Italy against Belgium or Portugal in the quarterfinals, and then we'll know. But on the other side of the draw, no one's really talking about Holland, but they're going about their business quite nicely, and it's quite an easy run, in my opinion, to at least the semi-final.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. There's some great players, no question about it. Plenty of pace and getting about their job nicely. Leon, as always, pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for that, and we'll catch up with you again very soon.
Have a great weekend, Reggie.
You too. Enjoy the sport. That's Leon Blanche there of Boyle Sports giving us all of his thoughts for the weekend. He got Italy early. Lucky him, because there's some team at the moment, no question about it. But I think, you know, he's not wrong in the other choices either. I'm going to give you his lucky 15 again, because it's something I know you'll all be interested in. In Newcastle in the 145, it's Major Jumbo, a 16 to 1 shot. In the 255 in Newcastle, we're looking at Cosmelli, an 18 to 1 shot. Then we go to the 330 in Newcastle. Island Brave, another 16 to 1 shot. Plenty of value from Leon this week, and he's changed his mind. He's gone from Van Gough, which was originally a 16 to 1 shot, but he's changed and gone for Wordsworth, 10 to 1 shot, who he thinks might be a better stayer in the big one, the Irish Derby, in the Curragh today. So we'll put all that up on the social media for you to have a look at. Okay, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we have loads coming up in the show. We've got rugby, Will Slattery, GAA with Declan Dake, Drake, Deirdre Smith will be talking golf with us, and Alan Cawley on the football. Be right back. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. And we do want to hear from you, our listeners, so if you could text us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068 with any questions or anything you'd like me to put to any of our guests. Delighted to be joined on the line now by Will Slattery, journalist and co-host of the Left Wing podcast. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Great. There's a good feeling around with the rugby at the moment when you look at the 20s. A great win last week. And again, another substantial win last night against Wales. And I think, you know, a 40 points to 12 victory over Wales at underage level, it's sort of rubber stamps just what a good place the underage system is for Irish rugby at the moment, doesn't it?
Yeah, and if you take into the context that it's 10 wins on the spin now at under-20s level in the Six Nations for Ireland dating back to 2019. They won the Grand Slam in 2019. They were 3-3 in 2020, playing great stuff, having beaten England away from home in style before COVID intervened. They were, I think if they'd beaten Italy, they would have wrapped up a second straight championship. And then to start off with two from two here with three different squads, as you say, it's a testament to the coaching that goes in, the conveyor belt, the talent. Already some of the guys from the previous teams have made their mark. You know, someone like Scott Penny has been very impressive, Ryan Baird as well. And then last night, there's another few people who are really putting their hands up. Jamie Osborne, the fullback from Nace, who's played for Leinster already. Neil Doak's son, who I know you would have played with. You know, Nathan Doak was really pulling the strings at number nine.
Yeah.
You know, lots to be excited about. It's a really good rugby as well. It's the way they're playing as well. They're not grinding them out. They're putting some pace on the ball. They're going wide. It's great to watch.
And also the fact that they've brought in Richie Murphy as coach. So the fact that he had gotten so many years of experience at senior level with the full senior men's team, and then bringing that experience back, and I suppose some of the learnings from that and putting them in at the under 20 level, that has to be a big benefit as well.
Oh, 100%. Like, you know, Richie Murphy would have been alongside Joe Schmidt for almost the entirety of his time in Ireland. So you can only imagine kind of the rugby intellect he would have soaked up in his assistant capacity. And it's good to see him even get an opportunity to kind of put that into practice as a head coach. And then even kind of in a joined up way, like being able to identify then the next generation, you know, he has an in with the setup, you know, the senior setup. Like he's looking at these guys firsthand in training on match days. It can only be a benefit, I think, to the wider setup. Like even the captain, Alex Candelan, who got man of the match last week and was brilliant again next week. Like him, I could see himself and Gavin Coombs in the Munster back row next year, you know, starting week in, week out and being, you know, kind of a passing of the torch from Steve Stander, who's retired, and O'Mahony, who maybe is coming towards the latter part of his career. These two guys look ready-made to step in the back row there. So, yeah, it's very positive. They play England next, I think, on Thursday evening. They've won their two matches pretty easily as well. So that's the big test. And interestingly, look, Stuart Lancaster's son is actually playing for England, Dan Lancaster. So a lot of intrigue there. And that'll be a real good test. If Ireland can go and win that as well, then you're looking at potentially another nation's title, which would be a huge achievement.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's going to be the crunch game. That's going to be the one that everybody's really looking forward to, is that English match, of course. And it's the real test of where they stand and what level they're at. Because, you know, what people forget as well is the English system. They've just got so many players to choose from. It's the same in France at that level compared to us. And although we have a pool of extremely talented players, it's still a relatively small pool in comparison to the likes of England and France. And that's why it's such a great achievement for us to be doing as well as we are.
Oh, massively. Like, if you look at some of the England sides that have won the rugby, the under 20 World Cup, or have competed in the final, the amount of talent on show is absolutely staggering. And likewise, the French team that won back to back world titles, I think in 2018 and 2019, like some of the talent there have already gone on to have, you know, really big careers at senior level. It is hard to compete. That's why it's so impressive, especially the last 3 years with three different teams, with COVID breaking it all up. Like England, year in, year out, have the playing pool that they should be dominating at this level. So whenever Ireland can go, like they did just before COVID, and beat them in England and playing some great rugby while doing so, it really is a noteworthy achievement. So I'm really interested to see how they go next week. And then even more so to see how some of these young guys kick on, you know, going into next season. Because I think there's a couple of prospects here that could really have, you know, big saves in the campaign to come.
Absolutely, yeah. Not really looking forward to it, and is highly exciting. And as you said, Doak, whose father I did play with and against many times, he's got some good coaching there from his father all along through the system. But he has some talent, is unquestionable. He's going to be pushing on to bigger things as his career progresses, hopefully for him. The other interesting one last night as well, La Rochelle not yet again failing at the final hurdle against Toulouse. Surprisingly for me last night, Toulouse were underdogs going into that game with the bookies. La Rochelle were the favourites. I never thought that to be the case, and Toulouse got the double done, and they never really looked like they weren't going to get it done. A great victory for them.
Yeah, big time. Like, winning a double is a seriously impressive achievement, especially in France where it's an absolute bear pit, you know, to get to the Boussellier de Brunner. But I think the favourites was an interesting one. I noted that as well. I suppose Toulouse had a couple of injuries, like, you know, Roman Entomac was gone at out half. You know, Zach Holmes, their replacement at half, was also injured. So Thomas Ramos, who funnily enough ended up getting man of the match and playing a really good game, was kind of swapped in from full back to out half. And it's actually the second time he's done that in the top 14 final, and they've won both, so he deserves a lot of credit for that. From a La Rochelle perspective, they'll be extremely disappointed. They were actually, I actually think, a lot worse than they were in the Champions Cup final. You know, it's funny, Will Skelton was such a handful and so destructive against Leinster. He was very, I thought, unimpressive in the two finals that I saw. I think Leinster will watch that back and they'll think La Rochelle really hit their peak form for that last hour in that semi-final, because I didn't think they got anywhere near that level in either final. I know there was very poor weather conditions in the second half last night, but it comes back to Ehiah West missed two more kicks last night that were very, very kickable. He missed three in the Champions Cup final. He was 7 from 7 against Leinster. Like, that's the big difference. He nailed them all on the semi-final stage. And unfortunately for Ronan O'Gara, for John O'Gibbs and for that team, he just couldn't be relied on these two games, which they'll look back with massive regrets, because they had a lot of chances in both games. They just never really got to grips with it. They never really hit their straps in any way like they did against Leinster. It's not easy to get to these finals. Like, I know they're a coming team, but, you know, they're not a Toulouse that are there year in, year out. Like, they could look back in a couple of years and think this was our real chance to nail one of the big two. I hope that's not the case, but for Toulouse, like, what a team they are. You know, you look through their team sheet, like Marchand and Boyan, the centres, you know, coming off the bench at Jerome Kino. You know, you had Medard, you had that experience, and, you know, even Manchester and Colby nailing a 50-metre drop goal. Like, yeah, the guy can do everything. It really was astonishing.
Absolutely. Astonishing is the word for it. Okay, I want to move on to the Lions now. We'll have a chat about the match in a moment. I'm sure, you know, yourself and Luke and your guests have gone into this in detail along the way on the podcast, The Left Wing, of course, but the Lions is throwing up a lot of debate. Matt Williams wrote an article in the paper last week, I think it was, giving out stink, basically, about the fact that this Lions tour was going ahead in the face of what's happening in South Africa and the surge of COVID and the massive increase in cases and all of that kind of stuff. What are your thoughts on it? Like, you know, what have their general feeling been with your guests and everything else about the fact that this tour is going ahead?
Yeah, it's a funny one. We actually haven't really talked about that element of it too much. Like, for me, I couldn't disagree more with people who say it shouldn't be going ahead. Like, they're always going to be in a bubble. So, why wouldn't it go ahead? Just because there's a lot of cases, does that mean we should shut off everything? You know, I'm struggling to see a meaningful reason why this can't go ahead. They're going to be quarantined in bubbles. They've already been vaccinated. If it's from a public health standpoint for the players, that shouldn't be an issue, because they're going to be, you know, they won't be mixing with people. If it's because it doesn't look good for a big sporting event to go on while a country has COVID cases, well, like, if that's the case, we have to shut up shop for everything. Like, you know, the Ireland finals went on last year in Ireland. That was a huge boost to the country at a time where COVID was, you know, was quite high in Ireland. I think the opposite. I think these sporting events give people great, you know, solace and interest and joy at a period where things are going badly. I'd actually have the opposite view. I think it's more needed now than ever. I think South Africans, the rugby mad nation that they are, would really enjoy watching the Lions play. I saw people have asked that question. For me, I just don't agree with it. I just think you have to try to get as much done as you can. People take a lot of solace from things like this. Like, if they didn't have the Lions to look forward to in South Africa, it would be even bleaker, I would have thought. I know people mightn't agree and say it doesn't look good for players to be playing in this environment, but I really don't agree with that.
I suppose the argument would be that, you know, the vaccination program is minuscule over there. I think they're only like at less than 2% in what they've managed to roll out. There's a, you know, pandemic surging through the country. There's people dying, and probably, if we're honest about it, the case numbers are only half being reported, and the death numbers are only half being reported as well, because in a lot of these poverty-stricken areas that they do have in the townships, they just wouldn't have a means of even reporting all of this. So I suppose the idea is, look, the focus should be on trying to save people's lives rather than worrying about sporting events. That might be the argument that that would be being made.
Yeah, like, and I can see that to a point, but I don't see why the Lions playing a couple of rugby matches in South Africa is, like, you know, taking massively away from the South African COVID effort. Like, I think it's a bit of a red herring. People throw that out and say it, but does, like, with the Lions tour being cancelled, ultimately matter that much for the COVID situation in South Africa? I don't see how it would really. I know it doesn't look maybe great, but like, I just think that's just noise. I personally, I think it should have gone ahead in the UK and you could have had crowds at the games. I think that would have been the best compromise. I know there's, like, you know, some concerns about the Indian variant and whatnot, but like, the COVID situation is a lot better in the UK. That would have been my preference. I know it's not the Lions ethos, but I think in a COVID year, there should have been more wiggle room. But yeah, no, I get what you're saying, and people are making that argument. You say Matt Williams, you know, a very prominent commentator, is saying it. I just strongly disagree. I think it's something that, if it can be done safely, which from what I've heard, it can. They're going to be bubbled. They won't be mixing with, you know, people. You know, I think it should go ahead, and I think it will provide a great distraction for people.
Doesn't seem like a great Lions tour to be on if you're a player, if you ask me. But anyway, that's...
Well, certainly if you're going to be a dirt tracker, you know, you have 4 weeks with no midweek games at the end. You'll just be
looking at the inside of a hotel room.
Yeah.
Not great. But look, let's talk about the rugby and a huge opportunity for the Irish contingent. And there's a lot of them. No question about it. Furlong, Henderson, Conan, Murray, they're all, Aki Henshaw, they're all there. And in this opening game against Japan, one that we expect them to do a serious job on, Japan in, of course. But this, I suppose this is the start of those players laying down their marker and really putting themselves in the spotlight for test selection later on as the weeks go on.
Massively. Like, you could look at this two ways. You could look at it as a kind of a pre-tour warm-up against Japan with not a lot at stake. Or I'm actually looking at it as a humongous opportunity for the seven Irish players to stake an early claim, considering they've all been there for the uninterrupted jersey training camp, getting face time with the coaches, impressing them on the training pitch, whereas a huge cohort of other players had club commitments that, you know, meant they either missed the jersey training camp or missed part of it, or they're even missing this weekend. And if you look at the Irish players specifically, like, I think they all have really good individual chances of getting ahead of their rivals for the test jersey. Like Bundiaki and Robbie Henshaw, if that partnership goes well, given the history, like Gatland talked about it during the week, their time at Connacht, how well they get on the pitch, if they get off to a good cohesive start as a unit today, I think it'll be very hard to shift them. Like, I know you could have Owen Farrell at 12 potentially, but the other centres are Elliot Daly and Chris Harris, who neither of them would be, you know, standout world-class operators in the centre, I don't think people would say. Like Tadhg Byrne, Gatland was talking him up massively during the week. He probably is already one of the favourites. So if he goes out with a strong start, gets a couple of turnovers, I find it very hard to see him being shifted out of the test team. Furlong's obviously in the box seat. Conan and Henderson will be the two guys, I think, who would probably be the furthest back in terms of breaking into the test team. But again, if they get off to a good start today, given that it's kind of a slightly shortened tour, there's like one or two less warm-up games to impress. And you've already seen with like Hamish Watson and Xander Fagerson picking up little injuries. If you miss a game here and there and you're behind in the test jersey race, it could be vital. So I think if the Irish guys go well today and it's a good win over Japan, I think they'll all be in a really good position going over to South Africa, where, say, like the guys from Exeter have to play catch-up. Like, they're playing today. Yeah. Like, what a really bad way to have to go into a tour. You play a premiership final and then you fly straight to South Africa. And then you have to maybe, you probably won't be able to play the first game, or you know, you don't really know how that'll go. Like, so some of the guys will be up against it. The Irish guys have had a great preparation to hit the ground running, I think.
Absolutely. And a chance, even in training and by their way on tour, of behaving to impress the coaches. So, yeah, it's hopeful. It's hopeful for them. Be an interesting game to see how that all unfolds in Murrayfield later on today. Going to have to let you go there, Will. That's all the time I have for rugby this week. But thanks a lot for joining us.
No problem, Reggie. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much. That's Will Slattery there of the Left Wing podcast, giving us his thoughts on all the various aspects of the rugby today. We're going to take a quick break now, but when we come back, we'll be talking to Deirdre Smith about all of the golf. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Time to return our attention to golf now. Delighted to be joined by our regular contributor, Deirdre Smith, on the line. Good morning, Deirdre. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well. First of all, commiserations last week. I know you lost out in the quarterfinal in the Ladies' Closed Championships in Ballybunion, but you had a good time, I'm sure, anyway.
Ah, yeah. Look, the golf was good and it was a great week and I just was beaten by better golf on the day and you just have to take your hat off to that. I played well and she played better and, you know, she chipped in on the last to beat me. So you can't answer that sometimes.
Oh, no, you cannot. It's annoying, you know, when you cannot. But it's good to be back at it in a proper way as well, I'm sure.
No. Absolutely, and you know, we're at the height of the summer now, where there's golf coming out of our ears from all angles. Yeah, so there's just so much happening.
Well, we didn't have you on last week because of the fact that you were playing in that, but Leona Maguire was going away nicely in the meantime, and so close last week, we were all rooting for her, but still going following on from that, going well again this week.
Yeah, look, it's hard to live with Nelly Korda at the moment. You know, she shot 10 under in round three last week and kind of, you know, just sort of put her stamp on the tournament. And it looks like she's done exactly the same this week. She's 9 under, phenomenal in the major championship. You know, this is the stuff of legends. You know, Greg Norman and these people have gone back years, and Johnny Miller and all these guys shooting these phenomenal scores in major championships. So it's just hard to live with her at the moment. And you know, hopefully Leona will get her chance. But look, she's right in there. Two shots better and she's you know, she's tied in the top 10. Four shots better and she's third place. So, you know, she's not too far away from the rest of the field. But it looks like Nelly Korda and Salas have kind of, you know, it's kind of become almost a two-horse race already. Look, there's a long way to go. There's 36 holes. So, but phenomenal last week too. Yeah. And you know, she talked about putting her foot down and making birdies and not looking around her. And you mean all that talk is fantastic, you know, because she just really feels she belongs there and she's just showing up every week and performing, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I watched her interview and very much that fact just seemed relaxed, comfortable there, not kind of, mm-hmm. You know, the way sometimes when you see people getting interviewed and maybe they're kind of just coming onto the scene, they look a little bit deer in the headlights and they're a little bit lost and almost apologetic for being there. That was not the case with Leona. She was very much comfortable, strong in her, you know, the way that she was delivering the interview and, you know, good belief in her own ability.
Yeah, no doubt, Reggie. But look, she hasn't got the record of number one amateur in the world for nothing, and that will really stand to her. She's beaten all these girls. She's no fear. You know, I said a couple of weeks ago, it's not a matter of if, it's when. I mean, a major championship would be a massive step, but certainly she's very close to a tour event, and you know it's only a matter of when it's going to happen. And there's just so much golf coming up too. And the British Open is on now in a couple of weeks' time. She'll get into all those bigger tournaments now because of her performances. So, you know, in a rookie year, it's phenomenal. But look, we've known this for a long time that this was coming, and she's delivering, which is great.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Mm. Other good news are for Irish golf as well. Niall Kearney leading the BMW in Germany.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Niall Kearney, this is a real turn up for the books. You know, he puts it down to some rest at home. He missed three cuts the last three tournaments, the British Masters in Denmark and the European Open. You know, his best finish this year was tied fourth in Tenerife way back in May. So we haven't seen this coming for him, but it's a super field, BMW International. You know, you've got so many of the US Open players who've come there, Oosthuizen, Garcia, Keimer. It's a marvellous field. Look, it's not a matter of his golf now this weekend. It's all about managing his emotions, really, and managing his mind today and tomorrow. And if he can do that, you know, top five would be a great finish for him. I'm sure he's not thinking like that, but he needs to stay in touch today now. You know, it's not an easy place to be on top of that leaderboard, looking down at all these people below you. But if he can manage his mind, you know, and he can stay in touch today is a crucial day for him, and then build on that tomorrow. So, marvellous. He's a great draw. He's playing with Bernd Wiesberger as well, who's ranked 40 in the world. I mean, Kearney's ranking is, you know, way in the hundreds. So it's a great draw. And, you know, exposing yourself to these people and playing with these people, you kind of realise, you know what, there's not much difference between me and them. And if you can just stay in touch today, it'd be great.
Absolutely. What about John Rahm last week in the US Open? What a performance from him. And, you know, given what had happened with the COVID scares and everything else, it was just, I think everybody was delighted to see him getting it done.
Yeah, you know, we talked about that 2 weeks ago, that nobody would begrudge him the win. And you know, and in a way, the stars were aligned. You know, that's his second win in Torrey Pines. He's the only person apart from Tiger Woods to have two wins in Torrey Pines. So, and he likes the greens. He's grown up on that Poana grass, and he liked them. And you know, we did talk about the fact that he probably was favourite and fully deserved, fully justified. And of course, the lovely touch that Harrington was one of the first people to call him when he was disqualified from the memorial. So it just shows you the class of Harrington too there. So it's a nice story. And marvellous, yeah. Everybody was so happy for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they were happy as well for Johnny Caldwell. I think the emotion that came out afterwards, you know, there wasn't too many dry eyes around when you heard him discovering or talking about the fact that he you know, had to go through such a journey to get to where he was and the support that he had to get that win.
Yeah, and I'm sure they were happy in Candy Boy when he opened up a tab up there too. Candy Boy Golf Club, marvellous golf course, you know, really steeped in golf in that club. And, I mean, he turned pro in 2008. He played Walker Cup with Rory McIlroy. So if this is not a victory for resilience, I don't know what is. And that was it. That was a really good field. And to shoot 64 in the final round, you know, marvellous. And a great, great tournament too. The fact that they've moved to it being a mixed tournament, and you know, it was spearheaded by two of the giants, and not only in Swedish golf but in world golf, Henrik Stenson and Annika Sörenstam. So, you know, just really massive success for him. But look, apart from the winner's check and the win, he's a 2-year exemption of the tour. Yeah. He gets into all the Rolex events, you know, bigger prize money. Now, unfortunately, he's missed the cut this week, but I suppose you could forgive him for that. You know, sometimes when you're on a bit of a high, and yeah, it's difficult to back it up. But it's just what comes with the win on the tour. That'll be really exciting for him. But, you know, 13 years in the making, 48 tour events, you know, so you just have to keep at it.
I know, you do. I remember talking to Gary Murphy about it, and the it's a tough life, and people don't really get it, you know. They see the glamour of, you know, the top guys like Westwood and Rahm and Tiger flying around in private jets to and from tournaments and all the rest of it. And Gary was telling me the lads are sleeping in the back of cars and wherever they can, basically four lads driving around together with golf clubs in the back trying to stay on the tour and keep their card. And it's some grind, you know, it really is. Some grind, and that's never seen.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, even Seamus Power, you know, look, Seamus Power this week again is tied fourth in the Travelers Championship. Brilliant. And he qualified last Monday with a 65 to get into that championship. So there's another example. And, you know, we say it every week, he just can't keep happening, but every week he seems to show up and he seems to perform. And you know, he was 100-1 going into that tournament. So,
he will make the breakthrough. It seems inevitable that it's going to happen. What is he, 34 or something now? But, like, you know, you just feel that one of those big ones is going to land for him any day soon, you know, and everybody's hoping for it.
Yeah, I'm sure that, again, like Caldwell, if that happens, it opens up exemptions to the major events and on the tour. And, you know, he has to be going in confidence. He has to be going in belief. And he's going to be playing with Kevin Kisner today, who's ranked 57th and 52 in the world. Mm. And again, he'll be able to see, you know what, there's not much difference. So what is the difference? And, you know, it's just learning and this is what Harrington did. I mean, Harrington did this at the very beginning of his career, just week in, week out, progress. And then suddenly he just went to the next level. And, you know, why not Seamus Power? And look, it's just fantastic days for Irish golf. Right. Every time you turn on the radio, there's somebody else, and it's not from our stars we're hearing it. You know, it's not from the Rorys and Lowrys. It's these people who have you know, really been resilient. And of course, you know, Leona. Fortunately, Stephanie missed the cut in the LPGA. She had a great second round, just missed it by one. I'm sure she's gutted too, you know. So yeah. Anyway, look,
we'll have many good days too, no question about
that. Yeah, I don't end on a bad note, but it's just marvellous. Golf, Irish golf is just on a crest of a wave at the moment.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, Deirdre, as always, great chatting to you. We'll catch up with you again very shortly.
Okay, Reggie, cheers.
Have a good week. All the best. That's Deirdre Smith there, a regular golf correspondent, giving us all of the latest news. We're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, it'll be time for GAA. Don't go away. You're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. Time for GAA now. Well, Declan couldn't make it into the studio for the show today, so producer Jane caught up with him a little bit earlier this morning to get all of the latest football and hurling news. Have a listen to this.
Declan Drake, it's great to have you on the line.
Pleasure as always, Jane. How are you today?
Good, good. Let's start off with Wednesday night then and the much-delayed Leinster Under-20s hurling final, which produced great news for Dublin. They won the title away from poor Al Galway, my neighbours.
Nah, there's nothing poor about them at all. It was a fantastic victory, all right, yeah. 120 to 118, a superb hours hurling from a well-coached Dublin team. Outstanding performances, Jane, all over the park. Brilliantly taken goal from Mark Sweeney, running from outside his own 50-yard line before burying it into the bottom corner in the first half. And Lee Gannon from Whitehall, Colm Kills, had an excellent game as well and winning the man of the match. Well, I'm delighted for the players. I'm particularly delighted for the management team, not least Paul O'Brien, the Bannister, who was from my own club in Crumlin. So a fantastic night because these boys have had so much disruption over the last number of months due to the COVID and two or three times this game was actually postponed, you know, and you're wondering, are they going to play it at all? They got the opportunity. They certainly went out on Wednesday night and grabbed it with both hands. So well done to everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. And what's next for Dublin?
Yeah, the massive occasion, Jane, of the All-Ireland final in a couple of weeks' time against the Munster champions Cork. You know, it's 6 months since they won the provincial title themselves, beating Tipperary. So they've waited an awful, awful long time for this event to come up as well. I would suspect the game would probably take place in O'More Park and Portlaoise, but that's to be clarified over the next week or so. But the important thing is that the Dubs are in it, and we wish them well in that final when it does come.
Okay, so to the senior hurlers, they start their championship campaign against Antrim. That's down in Navan from 3 o'clock. It's Matty Kenny's third year in charge of the Blues. Declan, you sat down with the boss during the week to get his thoughts on the contest.
We've already met Antrim, of course, in the league. We had the victory in Parnell Park. I think it was 28 points overall they scored that particular afternoon. You made the point earlier there, Matt, that no two games of hurling are the same. So what would you expect from Antrim on Saturday afternoon in Navan?
The league is the league. That's an old cliche. And like, this is the first round of the championship, like, you know, so it's going to be a completely different game to both teams, you know. So we're expecting a massive, massive battle from Antrim. You know, they're very, very passionate hurling people. They had a really, really good league. They're a fine team. They're playing very, very well. They have momentum on their side. And they're coming down to Navan to meet us. And it is going to be, as I say, a massive battle. And something we're looking forward to, which we're going into the game, hugely aware of the threat the opposition carry.
Now, squad news, not so good for Eamon Trolley or Dillon, you were saying there, unfortunately out for the season with a hamstring injury. He's a huge loss to squad in general, I suppose, from a goal-getting ability as well, Matty, which is, we know he's well capable of. How much of a blow do you feel his absence will be to the squad?
Well, firstly, on a human level or a personal level, you know, I'm really disappointed for Trolley himself. You know, he's got himself into, as he does every year, into great condition. Worked so hard, you know, in a difficult period there, you know, with the pandemic and the COVID. And so he came back and he was going really, really well. But unfortunately, he picked up this injury now that's going to rule him out for this year's Intercounty Championship. So, you know, he started his rehab and he hopes to be back in his club, which his club in September, October. But yeah, look at, for the team, yeah, look at, It's a blow for him personally. It's a blow for us also. Like, you know, he's a top marksman. He's a top inside forward, and one of the best inside forwards in the game today.
Sad news there for Eamon Dillon. All right, and we wish him well in his rehab from that injury. So, Declan, how will things pan out in Navan?
Well, first of all, Jane, I echo the best wishes you just gave there to Trolley, a fantastic bloke from Naofionnuala. Wonderful hurler, great servant to Dublin over the last number of years. Never gave less than 100% in the blue shirt and will be sadly missed by all. This afternoon in Navan, well, first of all, isn't it great to be looking forward to championship at the right time of the year? That's the first thing to say. We're playing Antrim in Park Tailsin. I've been there many times for football games, but never for a hurling match, so that will be a first. It's going to be a tough 70 minutes of hurling. I know we played them in the league a few weeks back in Parnell Park and we beat them by 8 points, but that was the league. This is the championship. The ante has been upped significantly. But I believe that if we can produce a consistent level of performance over the course of the 70 minutes, we have the players to win this game. Now, Antrim, no doubt, will feel the same. They've had a fantastic year since coming up, winning the Joe McDonagh last year. They were in our group in the league. They lost to us, yes, but, I mean, they did beat Clare and they drew with Wexford. So they have real pedigree. And as I say, it's going to be a really, really tough battle. But please God, we can come through it at the end.
Please God. I'll back Dublin in that one.
Thanks very much, Jane. Appreciate that, yeah.
So turning to the ladies' football, and it's business as usual, Deck. It's Dublin and Cork meeting in the final of the Little Ladies National Football League Division 1. That's Croke Park from 7:30. And here are some thoughts from the Dublin manager, Mick Bohan, that's ahead of the clash with the Rebelettes.
We're delighted to be in the National League final back in Croke Park and an opportunity for families to come and see them play. So, like, we've only been in one National League final in our time. Hard to credit for a county the size of what we are. And this group, you know, have set lots of standards, but that's something we're definitely going after. We know how good Cork are. I mean, they're serious competitors. There was a kick of a ball, to be honest with you. The last day, we probably got out with a win that we may not have deserved. They definitely should have drawn the game. So, yeah, huge contest. From our point of view, it's you know, it's creating those habits. You know, when you start winning, you want to keep that way. And you obviously want, we're well aware of the fact that we've a number on our back at the moment that people are going after. So it doesn't really make a difference who we play. We still have to keep certain standards.
Usually, Deck, when these two go head-to-head, there are fireworks. Tonight should be no different.
I would expect so, Jane. Absolutely. They met recently at Páirc Uí Chaoimh, which was a historic occasion as Dublin ladies played there for the first time. And there was only a point in it at the end. And if I'm not mistaken, they shared, I think, 7 goals on the night. For the full hour, it was end-to-end stuff and really whetted the appetite. I remember saying to Reg in the programme after that game that there was a great possibility that the sides would meet once, if not twice more, during the course of the year. And here we have this first opportunity in the league final. The first time, I believe, that the league final has been played in Croke Park. Dublin bring a 100% record into this game, winning their 4 games so far. Cork losing just the once, that was to us in that game in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Mick Bohan announced his starting 15 yesterday, Jane, and it shows one change from that which started the game against Mayo in that semi-final in Limerick. Siobhan McGrath, former player of the year from Thomas Davis, is back in the starting 15 in place of the unfortunate Orla Nolan. Orla went off injured in that particular game. So only one change, but I think if you look at the quality that's on the Dublin bench, ready to be sprung tomorrow evening in Croke Park, the likes of Niamh McAvoy with 5 All-Ireland medals to her credit, Carla Rowe back in the fold as well, and one or two others. Fantastic options for Mick. As I said to you, really, really looking forward to this one later on this evening from 7:30. There'll be no more than a kick of the ball or two maybe between them. And please God, another national title for the Blues.
Great. Big game tomorrow in the Leinster Football Championship with implications for the All-Ireland champions Dublin.
There certainly is, yeah. Leinster Championship kicking off tomorrow with a clash of Wicklow and Wexford. And the winners of that, Jane, will be out on July the 4th against Dublin in either Ockram or Chadwick's Wexford Park. So no doubt the Dublin management will be keeping a close eye on that. And just a bit of news during the week, there had been much speculation regarding Stephen Cluxton's future with Dublin because he hadn't been involved at all in the National League. But apparently he's back training with the group again, which is great news for all football fans in the county. And our banished door is back as well. Desi Farrell, having served his ban, which was imposed by the Dublin County Board after the breach of the COVID-19 regulations. So thankfully all that nonsense behind us now, and we can concentrate and focus on championship, which will start with the winners of that Wicklow-Wexford clash.
Great. Declan, great talking to you. We'll have you back in studio next Saturday.
Yes, looking forward to being there, Jane, bringing you all the news of two Dublin victories today, hopefully.
Hopefully, indeed. It would be lovely if that was the case. Declan Drake there with all of the GAA news. Some mouth-watering stuff coming up, no question about it. Okay, time to turn our attention to football now. Loads going on there as well. Delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thanks. I had a little bit of withdrawal symptoms, I won't lie, the last few days with no Euros on. It wasn't easy, but we're back today, so I'm okay. I'm all right. I'll manage. There was plenty going on last night as well in the SSE Airtricity, but you'd have to say two teams almost doing their best not to go top of the table, with Rovers drawn with Drogheda and Pats drawn away to Waterford. We start with that Rovers one, first of all. Kind of a funny match, I suppose. It'll be one that'll be looked on as a slip-up for the Hoops, but two kind of dubious penalties, wasn't that correct?
Yeah, I watched the match, Reggie, and... Yeah, to be fair, it was a good second half. The first half, Shamrock Rovers had been disappointed because they were totally dominant in the first half and they should have gone in maybe one or two goals ahead rather than just the 1-0 that they went in. So they'll be disappointed about that. And at that stage, if somebody had to say to you, Drogheda would come back into this and possibly win it, you probably would have laughed because they were so dominant, Shamrock Rovers. But in the second half, Tim Clancy made a couple of changes and Drogheda came out from the start out of the traps really quickly in the second half, and they were on the front foot right from minute one. And if anything, Reggie, they were the better team in the second half. Now, Shamrock Rovers did hit the bar late on, Gaffney, but overall, Drogheda fully deserved their point. They were very, very good in the second half. As you say, two dubious enough penalties, but I thought they probably were. They were soft-ish, but I can see why the referee gave both of them. But overall, I'd say Shamrock Rovers will be disappointed after the good first half performance. But certainly, they'll probably be happy to get out with a point because Drogheda missed the sitter, Phillips right at the end as well. So they've stuttered in recent weeks, Reggie. Since that unbelievable unbeaten run they've been on, their last eight games now, Shamrock Rovers, they've only won two, they've drawn three and lost three. So they're really going through a poor run of form. And you look at them losing during the week to Bohemians as well, and they're leaving the title race wide open for everybody else. We all thought, obviously, at the start of the season it would be Dundalk and Bohemians, but we all know the trouble Dundalk found themselves in. So they were out of the race. Bohemians, after their poor start, have got themselves back into the race. But Sligo Rovers and Pats have opened up an opportunity for them as well. And as long as Shamrock Rovers keep stuttering the way they are, it's given an opportunity, as you say, to all the other teams.
Yeah, but Pats didn't take it, and that'll be one that they'll be bitterly disappointed about, because Waterford are right down there at the bottom of the table, and although it's away from home, given the form of Pats of recent times, you would have expected almost a guaranteed win there.
Yeah, you would, Reggie, but to be fair to Waterford, since the new manager has come in, they've won two out of their last three, and they have improved. They genuinely have improved. And after Pats taking the lead last night, they had a man sent off after 19 minutes, Alfie Lewis. So I can see why that was a difficult game after that for them, because as I say, Waterford have definitely improved over the last 3 or 4 weeks since the new manager has come in, and it's good for them, I suppose, because they want to get themselves away from that bottom end of the table. But disappointing for Pats, but you'd be surprised, Reggie. They might look back on that in a few weeks and think it might have been a valuable point, because they're still at the top with Shamrock Rovers, and as I say, it's still wide open for everybody. Pats will be delighted with the form that they've shown in recent weeks, keeps their unbeaten run going since the break, and they'll be delighted with that. So as I say, there's a huge game now down in the showgrounds tonight. Sligo Rovers are playing against Bowes, the teams in third and fourth place, and obviously they're trying to close the gap as well. So if one of them takes points off each other, obviously that won't help their chances. But I still think both of them, obviously Sligo Rovers are in with a great chance, but I still wouldn't rule Bowes out of this title race. I watched them during the week, Reggie, to beat Shamrock Rovers. Georgie Kelly is in flying form. The team themselves, I think they've picked up 13 points out of their last 15. They're in great form as well. They're a very good side. I've mentioned that to you a few times on the show, even when they weren't getting the results, that they're not far away whatsoever. So it's a four-horse race, I think, Reggie. And it makes it good for all of us tuning in. But certainly Shamrock Rovers, I think, with the squad that they have, they'll be very disappointed about the last eight games.
Best league for a while in terms of excitement for the fans and the supporters, isn't it? The race, and as you said, four teams still in the hunt.
Yeah, it is. It's great for all of us, Reggie. Now that we're hoping to get fans back into the ground as well, we've hit the midpoint of the season now. I think it's 19 games, so certainly the second half of the season looks like it'll be really entertaining and interesting for all of us. And I think I was reading stats during the week as well. I think for the first time in 8 years. It's the most competitive league that we've had in terms of teams taking points off each other in the fixtures. And it goes for right through the table, not just the top end. So it's certainly very, very competitive at the moment. And as I say, that makes for a good viewing and certainly for us neutrals tuning in. Although I have to say, my hat is in the Sligo Rovers corner.
Of course.
I'm not much, of a neutral.
Yeah.
But certainly in terms of a title race, that's exactly what we want to see. And I think we'll definitely have it this year.
Absolutely. Okay, Euro time. Some absolutely belting games coming up over the next few days. I'm looking forward to the Wales-Denmark game tonight. I said it to Ken earlier. I think Wales have a sneaky chance on this, but I suppose the whole momentum and emotion that's bringing Denmark on along on the wave, that'll probably just edge it for them tonight.
Yeah, I would agree, Reggie. And they're the key words, what you just said, the momentum that they have coming into the knockout stages, because obviously we all know what happened in the early part of the group. And as you say, the emotion they're probably playing off as well at the moment, and that matters for so much front of pack stadiums that they've had as well. So, they really have a strong momentum with them. And even though Wales have done really, really well in the tournament, they've probably, I think they've exceeded expectations because it was a difficult group that they were in and they've done really well to get out of it. They have some momentum with them going into the game as well, but I think Denmark may just have too much for Wales and the journey could end today for them. But should be a great game. I'm looking forward to it. As you say, we've had withdrawal symptoms the last couple of days without it. It's all back again for next 3 or 4 days, so double headers as well. But I do think Denmark might just be a little bit too strong for Wales.
What about Belgium-Portugal tomorrow, the other big, huge one, 8 o'clock tomorrow night? I fancy Portugal. I have, like, Belgium have an amazing team, don't get me wrong, but I just haven't been that impressed with them. I know they're getting the job done, and again, Portugal haven't been completely outstanding either, but I think that last 2-2 draw was a real good result for them. I fancy Portugal against Belgium, even though they'd be the underdogs against them.
Yeah, I just thought with Belgium the other night, what changed it for me, Reggie, was when they brought De Bruyne and Hazard on, and that changes the whole dimension of the team. Obviously, they're two world-class players, as we know, and it just depends on how fit they are. But the fact that they came on in the second half and played so well, I think they're ready to go. They'll have another few days training under their belt. They'll start the game against Portugal, and I just think it adds a whole different dimension to them. I actually think they're a bit stronger than Portugal. Portugal obviously have Ronaldo, as we all know, but 3 penalties and 2 tap-ins, really. In saying that, he's still phenomenal, as we all know. But Portugal have been disappointed for me. I thought it'd be a lot better,
me too,
Reggie. Now, I know he was a bit conservative in the team that he lined up against France, and the midfielders were a bit more defensive. So it'll be interesting to see, will he go with the same approach against Belgium, or will he bring Bruno Fernandes back into the team? But Renato Sanches played really well, so I don't know, will he do that? But I think they're a better team when they're a bit more offensive with Bruno Fernandes. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. But I think Belgium will have too much for them, just with the attack and threat that they pose. They're very, very strong, Belgium, especially, as I say, when you bring De Bruyne and Hazard back into the team.
Oh, Sanchez was man of the match for me the other night.
Brilliant he was, yeah.
Can't leave him out. That would be a mistake.
No, but the lad that won the penalty, Danilo, they could leave him out and bring Fernandes in.
Yeah,
I just think they're a better team, Reggie, when they bring when he's in the team, Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah.
Now, I understand maybe why they did it the other night, because they were obviously up against France. But if you're going to go and win the tournament, go and win it rather than be hoping not to lose it. You know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
And now that we're in the knockout stages, that's exactly what you need, especially against the quality of Belgium. What's unfortunate for those teams as well, Reggie, and it's definitely worth mentioning, is that's the tricky half of the draw.
Mm.
Like, you look at that half of the draw compared to England's half, and obviously England playing Germany, as we know, Tuesday. If England were to win that, the whole draw opens up for them, and it's an unbelievable opportunity to have. Whereas you look at all the ones, the teams that I had said to you at the start that I fancied I could win it, the likes of Belgium, Portugal, France, they're all on this other half of the draw.
Yeah.
So it just makes things even harder. Italy as well, who we haven't mentioned, absolutely, who are the favourite.
We're a brilliant team. Absolutely brilliant team. Well, look, I'm out of time, unfortunately. But I, like you, we can't wait to see it all. I'm really looking forward to it. And we'll catch up with you again next week and see where we're at.
Brilliant. Thanks a million, Reggie.
Thanks a million. That's Alan Cawley there of Cawley's Call, giving us his thoughts on the Euros and everything that's happening so far in that. But that's all we've got time for on this week's show. Thank you for listening to us here on Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. With thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. I'd like to thank our producer, Jane McNamara. And I'd also like to thank all of our guests who joined us on the show today. We'll be back again next week. Enjoy all of the sport this weekend. Take care. Stay safe. And have a great week.